I want to say good morning to everyone this morning. It's good to be back here at Santa Fe again. I'm not sure if I ever made the trip here in 2 weeks in a month, or two times in a month, but it's good to be back and enjoyed the service here so far. If I could just make one comment on the Sunday school, I know in the men's discussion we talked quite a bit about marriage and the different aspects that wives have in submission and men in loving their wives. Had to think about the verse in Ecclesiastes where it says a threefold cord is not easily broken. And I've had to think about that. We've all heard the illustration of marriage as a triangle with the husband and wife on the bottom, all pointing to Christ at the top. And I had to think about that as we think about relationships, especially in the home. As husband and wife are connected to Christ, doesn't that make go a long ways in working out the relationships, the issues that we face, and the in our marriages? So for whatever it's worth, I thought about that as we were studying our lesson this morning. I appreciated the songs and all that, all the service so far, and I'd like to bring a message of, I hope it's an encouragement to you. It was to me as a challenge to me as I studied for it. I brought this message at home a while ago, but as we look around us and we see the world situation and the much unrest, and I'm sure what we're focused on a lot is the situation in Ukraine. And there has been many wars, it seems like, in the recent past. Not so long ago, there were protests in Canada. And there are school shootings in U.S. We all know all these things. We relate to these things, and these things can have a way of creating an uncertainty in our lives, at least in my life. As you look at the moral decay in society and how that degenerates and how people react and carry out their deeds they do, it can cause you to become fearful, to become afraid, to become apprehensive of what the future holds. I think we all like a certain amount of, we all like stability, don't we? There's many things we do not like to change, and as we look around us, we can see change, and it's not often for the better. And as I thought about that, and as I thought about change, and how do we as Christians come to a place of stability, come to a place of rest, come to a place of peace in the midst of all this? And not that we aren't concerned about this, not that we do not care about this, but to find rest and peace in the midst of this. And I like to look at a passage at Exodus. It's a name that God gave himself to Moses. And as far as I know, this is the only time these exact words are used to describe God, God's name. Now, there are other references to this. But in Exodus chapter 3, verse 14, so this is a familiar account that we probably all know by heart. But verse 14 says, "And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am, hath sent me unto you." The title of the message is simply two words. It's I am. And these are the words that God gave to Moses when Moses was called to lead the children of Israel. And no doubt it was a tremendous calling. It was a huge calling. It was a huge work. And God called Moses, And we want to look at this account more. But God called Moses, and Moses was very apprehensive. He was fearful. He was afraid of the calling that God had for him. He was afraid of going before King Pharaoh. He was afraid of going before his own people. And he came up with many excuses. We want to look at them later. But God, and here Moses asked God in verse 13, he says, but I'll just read verse 13. And Moses said unto God, behold, when I come unto the children of Israel and shall say unto them, the Lord your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? And then God gave this response. I don't know how often Moses thought back on this call that he received. It'd be interesting to know, but no doubt when Moses was faced with the many uncertainties of his calling, of leading the children of Israel, and of wondering how God was going to work out the next detail, did he think back on this call? It says, I am that I am. God was not a God of only in the past. He is not a God that will be only in the future, but he is today. But he was a God in the past, and he was a God in the future, or he will be a God in the future. It's something that I believe, at least for me, it's difficult to explain, that how God can always be, but God always is. And he never changes. And we can rest in that. I'd like to look at three parts of the, and I have three parts in this message this morning. I'd like to look at this account of Moses, first of all, and then consider the meaning and the significance of the name I Am, and then the last part, the practical ways it affects you and I today as we relate to this and as we yield to this I Am in our lives. I'd like to read Exodus 3, verses 1 through 15 to get this setting here. Verse 1 of chapter 3 says, now Moses kept the flock of Jethro's father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush, and he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. And he said, draw not nigh hither, put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land unto a good land and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come unto me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said unto God, who am I, that I should go unto Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, certainly, I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God on this upon this mountain. And Moses said unto God, behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, the God of our fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am, hath sent me unto you. And God said moreover unto Moses, thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, the Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, hath sent me unto you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial unto all generations. As I said, God was calling Moses to this great work of leading the children of Israel from Egypt to Canaan. We know why they were there. They were there because God, in his sovereignty, had Joseph sold into Egypt to preserve these Israelites in the time of famine many years before. And this nation and these people had grown into a great nation. And now God was fulfilling his promise to bring these children of Israel out of Egypt into the promised land. And we know the story of Moses and his early life and how he was preserved from death when many young boys were killed. And we can see God's sovereignty in this area of Moses' life as well. And in chapter 2, verses 10 to 15, we have the account where Moses was given to the daughter of Pharaoh. We know the story there, how that she had found him in the river, and she had let Moses' mother raise him for a number of years, and now Moses' mother had brought him to Pharaoh, and he became Pharaoh's daughter's son. But I find it interesting, though, that somehow Moses, in verse 11 of chapter 2, he still realized his true identity. He knew his true identity. He knew who he really was, and that he was an Israelite. We see the humanity of Moses in trying to take situations in his own hand in verse 12, how he killed the Egyptian, and how that worked out very badly for him in humanly speaking. He endeavored to take things into his own hands, and he killed this Egyptian that was oppressing an Israelite, and how that worked out. It was in the will of God, but yet it was not in the way that Moses had intended. And then in verses 16 to 25, Moses is in the land of Midian. And to me, it's interesting that Moses was on the backside of the desert at the Mount of God when God called him. And he was all alone, and God was able to speak to him and to get his attention and call him to this great work of leading the children of Israel. You know, God calls all of us to a work. Regardless of who we are, God has something for each one of us to do. And I think it's important that you and I spend time with God to help to understand what that calling is. And I find myself relating to Moses so often, identifying with Moses, because as God called him, he had many reasons why he thought he was unqualified. He had many reasons why it shouldn't be him. God didn't stop. God kept working with Moses until Moses accepted that call. And it's a challenge to me that God worked with Moses and God met the needs of Moses to help him fulfill that call. What does the name I am that I am mean to you? How do you describe it? You know, we all have our identity, don't we? We are, you know, belong to a certain family, or we live in a certain area, or so on. But God is simply I am. I am that I am. How do you describe that? In Isaiah 40, verse 25, I like these verses in Isaiah. It describes the sovereignty of God so well, I believe. In verse 25, it says, "To whom then will you liken me, or whom shall I be equal, saith the Holy One?" The reality of it is there's no one that's equal. There is no one that's equal to God. And in our language, in our ability to describe things, we simply have to stop and believe that God is and that God will always be. In Revelation 1 verse 8, it says, "I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, saith the Lord, which is and which was and which is to come, the Almighty." You know, everything that we relate to has a beginning and an end. Not so long ago, I have a farm, and not so long ago, we logged out the woods on our farm. You know, those trees were around for years. They were around probably they were older than I am. But they finally had an end. They finally came to an end. There was a time to harvest them. You know, everything that we have has a beginning and an end. Children are born. Children and old people die. There's a day of one's birth, and there's a day of death for everyone. But not so with God. He just is. And he is, and he is the only one that is like that. Malachi 3:6, "For I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore ye sons of Jacob were not consumed." 1 Timothy 2 verse 5 says, "For there is one God and one mediator between God and men, the man Christ Jesus." I believe this morning if you and I want to have a useful life, if we want to find fulfillment in life, there's only one way to do it, and that is to accept God's call upon our lives and to realize that the I Am has a perfect plan for each one of us. Moses was an example of taking things into his own hands that didn't work. And he also was an example of submitting to the will of God and allowing God to use him. So what? Back to this question, what does the I Am really mean? Well, number one, I believe it means that God is self-existent. We've already touched on that. He is not dependent on anybody else to exist. He is self-existent. He's all-sufficient. He is all-sufficient in himself. He is eternal and unchangeable. The unchangeableness in his word as well as his nature. You know, God never changes. We know that. That's nothing new to us. But as we look around us and we see the changing world around us, we like something that's stable. We like stability. And so can we in faith reach out and claim this I Am, this God that is unchanging, that his word is unchangeable as well as his nature. He does not change. We do not worry that he will not, that he'll be different tomorrow than he was today. He is the same. Psalms 19 verse 2 says, "Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hast formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God." Hebrews 13 verse 8 says, "Jesus Christ the same yesterday and today and forever." John 8 verse 58 says, "Jesus said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am." I believe the third thing that the I Am means is that he is faithful and true to all his promises. Deuteronomy 7 verse 9, it says, "Know therefore that the Lord thy God, he is God, the faithful God, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations." I found it interesting as I studied for this that throughout the Bible, if I counted right, that the phrase "I am the Lord" is mentioned 162 times. Does that give any indication to you that God is concerned, or God wants us to know that he is the only one, that he is the only God, that he is the only true God? So how did this, as Moses and Aaron, Moses accepted this call? And if you read the account of Moses in chapter 4 of Exodus, and how that he went through his list of excuses, and God provided Aaron to be his spokesman. And as those two went back to the children of Israel, in Exodus 4, I'd like to read a couple verses in Exodus 4, the end of the chapter. Verse 27 to 31. Exodus 4. And the Lord said to Aaron, "Go into the wilderness to meet Moses." And he went and met him in the mount of God and kissed him. And Moses told Aaron all the words of the Lord who had sent him and all the signs which he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel. And Aaron spake all the words which the Lord had spoken unto Moses and did the signs in the sight of the people. And the people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel, and that he had looked upon their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshipped. I find this very encouraging, that as these Israelites were in slavery, they were under bondage. And when Moses and Aaron came to them, they believed that God had sent them. And it says, they bowed their heads and worshipped, knowing that this God, this I Am, had remembered them in their afflictions. And I would like to think that they could remember some of the words that God had given his people, and God had given Abraham, and all the ones before them, that... And Joseph and Jacob and all them, that God was going to bring them out of this land of Egypt into the promised land. And they bowed their heads and they worshipped. And I believe a proper response to this God is that it produces a faith and worship. The last part of the message, part three, it produces faith and worship. They realized that God had spoken to Moses and Aaron, and they accepted that. And I believe it was instrumental in that they accepted that Moses and Aaron were the ones to lead them out. As we think about Exodus, the book of Exodus, what is the theme of the book of Exodus? We think about deliverance. We think about redemption, and Egypt is often a type of the world in the Christian experience. And as we apply that to our lives, the type of Egypt, the type of the world, of sin and bondage that we've experienced in life, and before we were Christians. I believe also that this recognizing this I Am produces a life of service. And we can read that in Matthew 28, the Great Commission. And the Great Commission that is to all Christians. And the promise there in verse 20 of the Great Commission, it says, Jesus said to his disciples, "I am with you always, even to the end of the world." So to make that practical, how does that look like in 2022? How do we put that to practice? How can the world see that we, while we live this life, we face life, we are concerned about the things that are going on in the world, but yet in the midst of all that, we can have a peace and a settledness in our lives that the world can see? Song that we sang right after Sunday school, "It's Not an Easy Road." I thought about that in relation to this message. In John 15, verse 18, Jesus said, "If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love his own. But because you're not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you." You know, there's many people that are seeking today for something better than what they've experienced. But yet, at the same time, I believe we can see the resistance to Scripture in many, many cases, that that the world does not understand the way of the Christian. I believe also that as Jesus spoke to his disciples here, I believe Jesus understood that the dangers that his disciples would face and the challenges that they would face. Do you ever experience that? Do you ever feel that way, the uncertainty of meeting someone and knowing what to say? Probably personalities are somewhat different in that, but as you look at Moses' excuses in Exodus 3 verse 11, first excuse was that he felt that he was unfit for this call. Then he feared the people, and he thought he couldn't talk well enough. He lacked eloquence. And then he finally just asked for someone else to go and take his place. And can you relate to any of those excuses? We probably all can to some degree. But I believe God asks us to do what he calls us to do. Remember, he is present in every situation, regardless of what comes our way. In Psalms 50, verse 23, there's a verse that stood out to me a while ago that as I was preparing for this, I thought of, it came to my mind. It says, "Whoso offereth praise glorifieth me, and to him that ordereth his conversation aright will I show the salvation of God." You know, as Moses led these children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, it wasn't too long after they left the land of Egypt that they ran in, that their faith was tested. They came up against the Red Sea. It's about the time that Pharaoh realized that he had made a mistake. And he regretted his decision of letting the Israelites go. And we know the story, how that they were up against the Red Sea and the Egyptian army was coming from behind. And the people were murmuring and the people were complaining and the people were wondering how this was going to work. And God told Moses what to do. And we know what the outcome was and how God miraculously made a way through the Red Sea. Are there ever situations that we face that we do not know which way to turn? There is, as it were, the Red Sea in front of us. There's what we feel is something behind us. We feel like we're boxed in. You know, in this verse in Psalms, it says, "Whoso offereth praise glorifieth me, and to him that ordereth his conversation aright will I show the salvation of God." Our conversation, our lives, do they give evidence of faith? Do we cry out to God in those situations and experience the deliverance of God that he wants to give it to his children? And we could look at many other examples of the Israelites as they journeyed, of providing the water and the manna and all the needs that they had, God provided for them. Because I believe that Moses remembered who called him, and that he remembered that God was going, that he was there, he was present. The third point, the promises of God become a reality. You know, as the Israelites were in Egypt, and as they went through the plagues that God had sent the Egyptians, or they saw the plagues that God sent the Egyptians, but finally it came down to the 10th plague, and that was the killing of the firstborn. But what was required for the Israelites to leave Egypt? As we look in Exodus, I believe it's Exodus 12. What God required of the Israelites that night in the last plague killing of the firstborn. We know in Exodus 12, verse 28, and the children of Israel went away and did as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, so did they. And that was in reference to applying the blood to the doorpost. What was required for deliverance? It was the blood of that lamb. You know, fathers, as we studied our Sunday school lesson this morning, it talked about loving our wives. It talked about not provoking your children to anger and all that. And as I studied for this, I wondered whose responsibility was it to make sure that blood was applied to the doorposts of their home? It doesn't necessarily say the fathers did it that I can find, but I'd have to think that the fathers probably were the ones responsible to make sure that blood was applied to the doorpost of their home. And that thought really struck home to me as I think about our families, I think about our homes, I think about the promoting the faith. You know, as we as fathers, we take the responsibility of our homes seriously. Do we, as it were, apply the blood of the Lamb to the doorpost of our homes by applying, first of all, the blood of Christ to our lives? And leading out in making our homes a safe place spiritually. You know, the blood made all the difference that night. Of whether there was death in the home or whether there wasn't. And in John 10, verse 9 and 10, very familiar verses as well, but I'd like to read the verses. We think about life. We think about applying the blood to the doorpost and realizing that the promises of God making the promises of God a reality. John 10, verses 9 through 10. Jesus talking here says, "I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief cometh not, but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly." The Israelites only had one way for life and for deliverance. That was by obeying the commandments of God, and that was by applying this blood to their doorpost. And I believe it's the same for you and I this morning. If we want life for ourselves and life for our families, it's by first of all applying the blood to our own lives as parents. But this kind of life does not just come upon us. In Hebrews 11, I won't turn to that, but verses 24 to 26, it talks about how Moses made a deliberate choice to reject the ways of the Egyptians and to follow Christ and to follow the things of God. And I think that's what it takes for you and I today. If we're to find life, it takes a deliberate choice to reject the things of the world and to find life through the choice to follow Christ. Revelations 21 verse 6 says, "And he said unto me, It is done. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give unto him that is athirst, and of the fountain of the water of life freely." So what are some promises that God gives to the faithful? I just want to read a couple verses yet. In Psalms 34, verse 7, it says, "The angel of the Lord encampeth around about them that fear him and delivereth them." And Isaiah 40, verse 31 says, "But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." In Isaiah 41, verse 10, it's probably one of my favorite verses, but it says, "Fear not thou, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee, yea, I will uphold thee by the right hand of my righteousness." As we think about the changing scenes of the world and the uncertainty, and we can, you know, whatever, however you feel about all the things that are happening, we can rest in the fact that God, this I am, is unchanging. This I am has everything in his control, and that there is nothing happening today that's taking him by surprise, but rather it is according to his plan. So I let this as an encouragement to you. Do not become fearful. Let's rest in the promises of God. Why don't we kneel for a word of prayer?